Why does society attack its most peaceful members, while the greatest robbers and the most violent men are honored? Shall we give up these rights without a whimper because the television newsman says it's best?
In these days when our basic rights are being tossed out in the name of security, it's a good time to see how hard it is to win them in the first place. I'm Alex Smith with a story of how the right to free assembly and freedom of belief was won by a single plucky group known as the Quakers. And 400 years later, this same group, now simply called the Friends, named, funded, and founded Greenpeace. That's why we call them the Green Quakers. Today's piece comes from Radio EcoShock at www.ecoshock.org. That's E-C-O, shock like an electric shock, .org.
At the end of 2004, the streets of Kiev, Ukraine were packed with the people demanding a recall of their corrupt election. In this case, the people's voice won out, but the police and army were standing by to end the protest, exactly as the Chinese government had done at Tiananmen Square. As we begin the new century, the old industrial empire of oil, chemicals, and uranium still rules. The politicians openly represent corporate interests. Environmentalists, like other social activists, find themselves on the outside. They presume, given the worst cases of injustice, that people are still allowed to meet, to plan, and perhaps to protest in large groups. How long will this remain true? Freedom of assembly currently exists only in name in Western democracies. In fact, most gatherings require a permit, which can be refused by the authorities. Recently, in the United States, the so-called Patriot Acts have taken away basic rights that took hundreds of years to gain. Similar laws have been enacted in Britain and in other countries. Suddenly, no warrant is needed. Everyone can be spied upon for whatever cause. Anyone can be taken away without a lawyer and held, as they used to say, at the pleasure of the king. Those who care about the planet and about its human citizens should take just a few minutes to find out how their rights were won. Those things we take for granted and have so easily given away were gained not by riots and revolution, but by nonviolence. Strange though it may seem to the materially oriented youth of today, these rights came from very religious people. The fundamental basis of social activism and environmentalism was originally religious. We have followed the trailblazing of Calvin, a religious reformer whose history is difficult to love. Calvin established a religious regime which did not hesitate to execute people who disagreed with them, even about minor dogma. The peaceful men and women who expanded our personal rights came 100 years later after Calvin, in the famous Society of Friends, labeled the Quakers. We owe them far more than history tells. In the 1600s, England was a political ferment. A sect of Calvinism, called the Puritans, rose in armed rebellion against Charles, the Catholic King of England. They executed him and set up a religious dictator named Cromwell. Following his long and interesting experiment, where life had some similarities to the Taliban in Afghanistan, no dancing, no card playing, the more socially liberal Stuart kings returned for a short period. You can see that everyone in England had to declare a side or change sides often. Life was interesting, but dangerous. At the same time, church and state were married in England. The king was the head of the Church of England and controlled the appointments of bishops. This class of bishops, ministers, and priests jealously guarded their state-enforced boundaries of salaries, pensions, houses, and tithes on the people. They tolerated no competition. In 1664, laws were passed forcing everyone to go to church. Snitches told on those who stayed home to get 1/3 of the big fines for the failure to attend the official churches. But what if God spoke to our consciences at any place or time, on a day other than Sunday morning? Into this mess of human greed and passion, yet another sect developed from the old Calvinist seed. A lowly shoemaker named George Fox felt that God had spoken directly to him. These churches and parsons were just human inventions, God said. People high and low needed to pray directly to God and listen to the inner voices of their conscience, and they must act according to that inner voice, no matter what the rest of the world may say. George Fox began to travel up and down all of England, preaching his vision of Christianity. He gained thousands of followers, which were named the Society of Friends, because some of the believers began to shake when God directly reached into their hearts during prayer. Their critics called them the Quakers. The Friends, ever obliging, took up that name too. When we look into the teaching and actions of this Society of Friends, we find most of the values only rediscovered in the 1960s. For example, in the totally male world of religion in the 1600s, Fox declared that women were equals and were equally likely to hear the voice of God. When Fox allowed women to preach, some of his followers ran away to form a men-only sect. In his later age, in between his many sojourns in English jails, Fox married a widow named Margaret Fell. She was a famous woman activist of the age, speaking to kings, prisoners, lords, and servants. This idea of equality, so new to the age, was carried to every aspect of life. Fox managed a dangerous visit to America via Barbados. He began a campaign for better treatment of slaves, followed by total release. In 1783, the Friends petitioned the British House of Commons for an end to slavery. When sent to jail, Fox lobbied for better prison conditions. England made plenty of harsh laws, with long prison terms, even for minor offenses, but spent no money on jails to match. People were kept in unheated, leaking, abandoned buildings, in barns or caves. The Quakers converted prisoners and began their long struggle to improve their conditions. Elizabeth Fry, the woman famous for reintroducing prisoners to society, was a Quaker. When George Fox was beaten by crowds, he refused to lay charges and forgave all. When his clothes wore out, sleeping in the fields, Fox the shoemaker made himself a colorful suit of leather. He wore his hair long. George Fox was a very big man. He was a spectacle. Who didn't the Quaker see and help? In 1792, the Society of Friends set up the first real asylum for the mentally ill. Unlike previous dungeons, like Bedlam, the Quakers offered kindly treatment instead of chains and beatings. The Quakers held meetings of dozens or sometimes hundreds of people. They gathered, always in very simple clothes, to pray, often silently. Into this absolutely silent meeting of prayer, soldiers waded in to beat and arrest them. Often the soldiers were called in by the local church minister. During the emergency of Cromwell's time, when the royal supporters had many plots, all meetings were banned. We may see the same under the next alleged terrorist emergency. It was then and ever after that the Quakers asserted their right to free assembly. As today, the authorities always feared groups of protesting people and beat them with police or army men. The Quakers continued to meet, in homes or openly on the streets. While others hid away in fear, the Quakers found their right to free assembly as important as their lives. Women, grandmothers and mothers were hauled away along with the men until the foul prisons and prison ships of England were overflowing with Quakers. Some of them were sent off to Africa as slaves. At one point, there were almost 5,000 Quakers in British jails. At least 400 died from bad prison conditions or from beatings. Pious men and women, young and very old, were chained and abused. Remember, Christians do not just persecute Jews, but other Christians as well. When the government finally relented, seeing so many peaceful and innocent citizens filling the jails, the Quakers won not only freedom of assembly, but freedom of worship as well. This began with the Toleration Act of 1689. Yet, even after the Revolution of 1688 put Parliament ahead of the King, the authorities found any excuse to harass and jail the Quakers. Why does society attack its most peaceful members, while the greatest robbers and the most violent men are honored? The Quakers hated war and violence. None of them would serve in the army. They called for an end to war, not in the future, but right away. They said, quote, "We could learn war no more, but could love enemies and forgive them," end quote. Even in World War II, the Quakers were immediately recognized as legitimate conscientious objectors. When attacked, they would not fight back. In all their missions to many countries, they preached against war while bandaging the wounded and feeding the poor. These are the villains we throw into prisons or beat up. These were the first anti-war protesters. For the next 300 years, the Society of Friends led every kind of mission to gain peace and end war. Half the history of pacifism is found in the story of the Quakers. They are still working to end militarism, to stop horrible weapons of mass destruction, even today. Here is an old book to love. The title is Rebel Saints by Mary Agnes Best and published in 1925. Mary Agnes says, quote, "At fearful cost to themselves, the right to free assembly was the gift of the Quakers to our race," end quote. No one in history denies this. A reasonable reading of history would attribute the American Declaration of Independence and Bill of Rights to the Quakers, rather than the usual founding fathers. In the 1600s, the states of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware were privately owned by the Quakers. For 36 terms, the governor of Rhode Island was a Quaker. The most famous Quaker, William Penn, founded Pennsylvania as a religious colony. Until overrun by others, it became a model of freedom and toleration, even to the Indians. Quakers administered Pennsylvania for 75 years. When new settlers wanted violence against the Indians, the Quakers abandoned politics again. The essential tenet of the Society of Friends, beyond equality, was the value of individual freedom. Despite their dearly held beliefs about Christian life, and because of their own persecution, the Friends doggedly protected freedom of speech and freedom of thought. These ideas, which survived the jails of Britain and the whippings of New England, were written into the founding documents of America and many other countries. If you hang around used bookstores, eventually you will find a thick book called Fox's Book of Martyrs. Millions of these were printed in many different versions and languages. They tell stories of those who were persecuted for religious liberty and liberty in general. Did they all die for nothing? Shall we give up these rights without a whimper because the television newsman says it's best? Shall we give up the most essential freedoms of speaking and coming together to keep away a distant boogeyman? Why not speak and act now to keep our freedoms before the next martyrs are necessary? There is no social activism, no environmentalism without the gifts of the Quakers. Then it's no surprise, this fruitful little sect of sanity provided three of the four major founding members of the World Environmental Organization, Greenpeace. Jim Bolin and Paul Cote were associated with the Friends. Irving and Dorothy Stowe were Quakers, dedicated to peace causes. The Stowes were activists since the 1950s, when both converted from Judaism to join the Society of Friends. Irving Stowe left his job as a lawyer to work for his conscience full-time. He created several groups, including SPEC, in Vancouver. Irving began to write a column in a local newspaper called Green Peace. After the name was suggested by another, Dorothy, although working full-time to support the family, became the bookkeeper and secretary for the new group. The first big project for Greenpeace was to witness against a nuclear bomb test at Amchitka in the Alaskan Islands. The Society of Friends had previously sent boats to witness nuclear tests. Someone should see this evil and talk about it. Irving became treasurer for money raised for the new protest. He called on half a dozen Quaker groups in the United States for more donations. They responded generously, so the beginning of Greenpeace was aided by the Quakers. The local group went on to raise more money, partly through a rock concert featuring the young Joni Mitchell and her friend James Taylor. The motley crew found a boat captain brave enough and set up through the stormy waters of the Pacific coast to Alaska toward the blast. So we can add to the long list of honorable actions of this small Christian sect a major push towards environmental sanity. As, according to their philosophy, each individual is expected to connect with God and to act according to his higher inner voice, Quakers are Christian anarchists. They have many loose-fitting organizations which may consist of a single yearly meeting. Here is a list of some Quaker environmental publications and websites. Earthlight, published by Pacific Yearly Meeting. Befriending Creation, of Quaker Earth Care Witness. See their website as well. Caring for Creation, The Biblical Basis of Earth Care by Lisa L. Gould. In 1985, Quaker Marshall Massey suggested the creation of a North American Quaker environmental group called Friends Committee on Unity with Nature. The group was established in 1987, but is now known as Quaker Earth Care Witness. Marshall defines Quakers as a society of mystics. They turn their minds in God's direction without distractions and listen to what he might say. He feels that this inward direction has helped Quakers respond more rapidly than other Christians to the newly emerging environmental crisis. Marshall says it is not enough to think of humankind as stewards. We are deeply entwined in nature because every living thing is part of God. We are just a small cell in a giant single divine creation. In another article, Marshall quotes the Bible's book of Job, which says, "If you would learn, then ask the beasts, or the birds of the air, and they will tell you, or speak to the valleys and hills, and they will teach you, and the fish of the sea, who will declare to you. Who among all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? In his hand is the life of every living thing, and the breath of all humankind." From Job 12:7-10. These green Quakers often point to the work of the naturalist John Muir, who used Judeo-Christian imagery in his writing about nature. Muir was one of the founders of the Sierra Club in 1892. Yosemite Park and others were saved mostly due to the work of John Muir. He developed a biocentric Christianity, which has been adopted by Protestants like Wendell Berry, Richard Cartwright Austin, and the Catholic brothers Thomas and James Berry. In 1867, Muir, a Scotsman, went on a 2,000-mile walking tour through Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, North Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. He rejected anthropocentric Christianity, writing, quote, "Why should man value himself as more than a small part of the one great unit of creation? And what creature, of all that the Lord has taken pains to make, is not essential to the completeness of that unit, the cosmos?"
You've been listening to Green Quakers by Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock at www.ecoshock.org.